Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. Give your walls the most advanced protection with Pittsburgh's Paramount Interior Paint and Primer in one. It's scuff, scrub, and wear resistant, while also blocking stains and delivering true one coat coverage. Choose from thousands of color options and refresh your space for spring. View our entire selection of paint and accessories today on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to find great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, second hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Barry, Nick, and Joel in studio on a Tuesday, way back Wednesday. It looks like we already have our theme. Song's about getting old.
We still got to discuss it.
But Barry and I are in discussions. We're also contemplating using cartoon theme songs, what? Amongst other things.
It's all good.
Somebody on Twitter even suggested, why not do songs about, like, if we didn't have one, a topic already, do songs that we think represent the other person, which we get that a lot.
Yeah, we do get that a lot.
I think people thrive on our hatred for each other.
Yeah.
Like, they want us to fight and argue and be mad at each other.
Yeah, because almost as much
why
as
else
we
would
do.
You suggest a theme like that?
Well,
right?
Because they run out of how many times they can suggest one-hit wonders.
That's true.
Because that's suggested a lot.
That is true.
As well. So... So you didn't see any of the Rockets game last night. I was going to say, because all the drugs you had on, you probably thought James Harden didn't travel last night.
Oh, no. That was definitely a travel.
Did you see it?
That was like, yeah, that was pack a suitcase, and I'm going to need to check your transfer ticket, because that was, he traveled for sure.
Yeah, and I know, Nick, you were there. It's one thing if it happens like in the second quarter, but that was like crunch time.
Why are you wearing a hoodie?
Because you put the freaking AC at like 50 degrees.
You look
and I'm
like
cold.
A moron.
I
right
don't
now.
Care.
And then you got your little speaker thing
whatever.
Coming out of the top. Now you look like you have two bumps.
Now
up there.
Everybody wants producer cam on the live stream.
It's not happening. It's not happening.
So was it a travel, Nick?
Absolutely.
Five steps, right?
Harden's yeah. getting some of the heat for it, and I can kind of see why, but because that step back that he does looks similar despite it being an extra step back, basically, and the referees didn't catch it. They didn't catch it, and so he got away with it. They took advantage of a break that they caught. It's without – you could even make the argument that there was a fifth step, that little first little mini step that he took. Like, it was beyond a travel.
Yeah.
But at the same time, man, the ref, you're standing right there, dude. Like, it happened by the sideline. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, I know Harden has that weird step back move, but you can't pick that up? Like, you can't see that that was a travel?
Well, and that was one where he drew a foul on it because the shot wasn't even close. But in order to look at it like you're saying, in that referee's position, just to see the foul, you have to already, just from a rhythmic standpoint, realize, boom, 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 boom. Well, those are the steps he's taken to try and avoid, you know, the defense, and then he gets hit. You've got to be able to say that's a travel. And look, here's the problem that Rockets fans are going to have. And I'm not being critical, although it was a travel. He picked up and carried that team on his shoulders again last night with another huge performance, 47 points. He's been doing it for over a week now. He's doing what a superstar is supposed to do. The biggest problem is now, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with the calls or not, and everything you're saying, Nick, the bottom line is the league is now going to focus on it again. Just like when Steve Kerr decided to start nitpicking about whether it's a travel or not. This is going to bring attention to it, and every time he does the step back, and now you're going to see the whistle called more, and there's going to be, the minute it happens, it's going to be an uproar for Rockets fans because they're going to like, oh, so now you're going to pay attention to it, or now you're going to call it when you didn't call it then.
Yeah, but it's not a travel, so that's the thing. Is that step back, it's not a travel.
See, that's a very, everybody goes
that's
back
a
and
very,
forth.
Very,
it's
very
not
fine
a travel.
Line.
I don't think it is either, but a lot of people call
he
it a travel.
He knew he traveled, by the way. You saw the post game,
oh,
right?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, yeah.
You saw what he said.
Yeah. Why am I going
to,
what is
not,
why would
I incriminate
myself?
He said, what do you
myself?
Want me to say?
Yeah. Yeah, he goes, what do you want me to tell him myself? See, he knows he traveled in that case, but they've talked about the rules. And I mean, you're allowed two steps before you shoot the ball. It just, you no, there's no rule that says you can't take
I'm
them backwards.
I'm going to tell you this right now. Every time, it is. There are times it's a travel. Because it from a referee's perspective, you have to judge. It's like just jumping a jump step when you go into the lane. where you can do that 2 feet down and then take another step. But at the same time, there are times throughout the course of the game, every single time he does it, there are times when it's flawed, which means he travels. He takes that little extra hop step. By rule, by law, by what he's doing, is it a travel? No, not every time. And you're not supposed to call it if he is, like you said, taking the gather step, the two steps. But overall, are there times in the game that he travels? Absolutely.
And if you and to USA Mike's point, he said traveling is one of the least called violations in the NBA. You want to start nitpicking on James Harden's step back? Yeah, then you better start calling every single travel, carry, double dribble, because it's the same thing. Every point guard in the NBA carries the ball every time down the court. Every time. By the letter of the law, by the rule, once that palm gets like 3/4 under the ball, they all do it. So it's one of those things where if it's egregious like the 5 steps, I totally get it. That should have been called. There's just that was obvious and blatant and it was missed. But what he's doing to the letter of the law, I mean, it's legal.
And Joel's right in that it is definitely going to bring attention to James Harden, regardless if he, you know, even if it's his fault or right. not. I mean, yeah, I remember
that is true.
Shaq. They literally changed the rules because of him. He impacted the game so much, they literally changed the rules because of him. Are they going to do the same thing with James Harden? Perhaps. But if they do, just like you mentioned right now about all these little nitpicking calls that they're not picking, like all these calls that they're not calling, they're going to say, well, if you're going to call this on James Harden, if you're going to change the rules because of James Harden, you got to call this, you got to call that, it's going to be a much more difficult job for the officials. So you got to be careful if you make that decision to change the rules because of one player.
Well,
one player.
And don't forget, there was the big argument a few years ago. Remember when they were doing hack a Dwight and hack a everybody in
DeAndre
the NBA?
Jordan.
It was like, well, we're not going to change the rules because 3 people can't make a free throw.
Right.
That was the NBA's stance, is we're not changing the rules for 3 people. So you can't change the rules for one guy. And more people are starting to use that step back three, that step back shot. So it's starting to become more prevalent, too.
The Euro step. The step
look like a travel at first.
Yeah,
remember when you first saw a Euro step?
This is why,
I'm pretty sure everybody went travel.
The Euro step is the fancy way of calling the jump stop, which I was talking about too. The fact of the matter is that James Harden, you can get mad at him all you want, right? Because I tweeted out because people are so over the top now on the fact that this guy is just bending the rules. No, he's really not. You know what he is? He's maximizing the rules to his advantage with the Euro step, yeah. with the step back, with the things that he does.
He's
so
smart.
Don't get mad at him. Get mad at the league. But because until they decide to change the rules like you were talking about, then the man is doing everything within the rules to excel because he's scoring at an unbelievable pace. People can't find any way to properly guard him without drawing fouls. And I tweeted this morning. He has 4,278 made free throws on 4,990 attempts since the start of the 2012-13 season. That's almost 2,000 more than number two on that list, which is Russell Westbrook. So the fact of the matter is, don't get mad at James. Get mad at the rules because he's maximizing every rule in the book.
But can I ask you this, Joel? Because
yes.
Do you think that he's really maximizing the rules? Like, do you think he went in there and said, you know what, I'm going to do this step back because I know I can make this 3-pointer and they're not going to call it? Or do you think he included that into his game and he had success and he's like, you know what, this is working. I'm doing this step back. It's creating space. I'm able to hit the 3-point shooter, so I'm going to keep doing it. Or do you think, oh, you know what, I'm going to get away with this. I'm going to maximize my possibility to score by bending the rules. I found the loophole. I don't think I'm giving James Harden that much credit. You know,
I think what he did was, and I think a lot of this comes from the offseason too, right? When they're doing individual workouts and they're trying to add things to their game. I think he sat down, whether it be on video or talking to certain coaches, and decided, hey, I'm doing this in the summer leagues and I'm getting away with it. And I'm maximizing what I'm getting out of it because I'm getting open looks. Is this legal in the NBA? And I think that just like analytics is a huge part of the NBA, you see these guys on the sideline, Nick, pregame with the iPads. They're looking at tape. And I'm sure that there are coaches, and there are certain coaches on the Rocket staff. Brent Gunning's one of them, who's been a big advocate of watching the video while they're warming up. And I think that it's a progression of things that happen where you go, no, I can do this, or I can tweak it just a little bit so I'm not traveling, because in the summer league they might not call it as tight, or the Rucker League or whatever he's playing in. But you can get away with that. And then he'd be like, well, why wouldn't I? Just like the Euro step. Until people figure out how to defend it, and until refs start calling traveling, if they think it's a travel, and obviously through video you've proven it's not, why wouldn't you do it?
I wonder if it's one of those things where, like in the NFL, you'll see certain personnel packages or formations or things done. And in the past, they've had to go to the refs before the game and say, look, we're going to line up and do this. And by the letter of the law in the NFL, this is not, you know, illegal formation or anything like that. We wanted to make sure you guys are aware of it. That's been done before. And I wonder if Harden had to go to the referees and had to go to the head of officials to say, look, this swipe through that I'm doing, is this up and under, and get that should be called. That's a foul. And or this step back three is it's, you know, it's not a travel. And you just wonder if he had to go to them and get their buy-in and get the agreement.
Here's what they do. Just so you know, little fun fact. The Rockets are one of the most advanced teams in the league at being thinking ahead. They'll bring in ex-NBA officials, and those ex-NBA officials will watch them scrimmage. But to maximize it, if Harden was smart or the coaching staff was smart or in combination, they go to those guys at that point and say, what can I do? What can't I do? Because it starts, like I told you about, when they force all the broadcasters into a room as part of referees camp and all the NBA refs talk about, and they're going to tell you, this year our point of emphasis, remember Barry, to your point, carrying became a point of emphasis. So all of a sudden they were calling it like never before, and it was slowing down the game and it was pissing people off, but it was so that people wouldn't be as egregious. So they'll give you two or three points of emphasis, the high pick. If you're moving, remember that high screen? Every time a guy moved a shoulder, they called it because they were like, too many guys are getting hurt, too many guys are taking it to the next level and dropping a free elbow on somebody. So if with the Rockets bringing in ex-officials, that's the perfect time, and there's nothing wrong with it, to say, hey, I'm about to start working on this move. Is this a travel? And then let me see it in the course of a scrimmage. You can do it this way. Or if you just do this, it's not a travel. And if he can, that's what I'm saying. Then you master your craft. Then you go back and keep working on it until you get it to the point where you aren't traveling anymore by letter of the law. Hey, he's maximizing the rules. I think it's credit to James Harden and whoever's helping him, if there was any help in the process. Because he's done it on two different occasions. He did it with the Euro step, and now he's doing it with the step back. And even he survived Steve Kerr being critical of it. So, you want to get this before we go?
No, we don't have time.
Okay. Well, then, Josh, hang in there. We'll get you after the break talking a little bit about Harden. In the meantime, if you want to be like Josh and join the show, 713-780-3776. You can call, text that number. You can hit us on Twitter. We're checking tweets throughout the show as well as text. And we'll be back with a whole lot more. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Right now, I want to tell you about that team we were just talking about. It's your Houston Rockets. And right now, if you have a Rockets fan on your holiday gift list and you're looking for the perfect gift for those people out there that just love Rockets basketball, well, I have an idea for you. There's two holiday packs right now that the Rockets are offering up. And for as low as $149, you can get tickets to five Rockets games. That's five games for $149. That's a great gift. And it's not just any team on the schedule either. The Red Pack gives you Kyrie Irving and the Celtics, Anthony Davis and the Pelicans, and Luka Doncic and the Mavericks. And the Silver Pack has Kawhi Leonard and the Raptors, Steph Curry, KD, and the rest of the Warriors for their final visit to Houston, and more. You can take advantage of both of those packages by logging on to Rockets.com, or you can call 713-627-DUNK. And while you're on either Rockets.com or calling that number, figure out tomorrow night is a great deal as well. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, and one family holiday photo with either Santa Clutch or live reindeer, starting at just $89. $89 for four tickets, four hot dogs, four sodas, and a pick? How do you beat that? I mean, that's another great deal pre-holiday. And don't forget, the Rockets are also playing on Christmas Day at 2 o'clock. So if you want to get away from the relatives, get out of the house and watch some hoop. 2 p.m. Toyota Center, Rockets in the Oklahoma City Thunder. All you got to do, Rockets.com or 713-627-DUNK. And if you're looking for more gifts for that Rockets fan, also check out RocketsShop.com and figure out all the gear deals that are going on, where they do a different deal every day up until Christmas. It's the Rockets. It's the holidays. Give your Rockets fan all the gifts that they want and more by getting to Rockets.com or calling 713-627-DUNK.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on the Usual Suspects, knee deep, hour number two, 3 hour show. Appreciate you taking us along for the ride on a Tuesday. Working on a Way Back Wednesday theme for you as well. We'll let you know. We were talking Rockets before the break. Josh, you called in. You want to get in here. We've had a lot of texts and tweets about it as well. You want to talk about James Harden. Josh, what's up?
Hey, love the show. Long time listener, first time caller.
Appreciate that.
Y'all are my favorite time slot. Anyways, so, I mean, I have a very unbiased view of this whole Harden thing. I'm not from Texas, not from Houston, nothing like that. So I look at it very, I have a very unbiased look at this. I've become a very good, like a very good direct TV slow motion user. And last night, Harden, I swear to God, on four or five separate occasions on these step backs, Harden takes up to five steps. Like, if you slow it down and look at it, I mean, more than two steps of the travel, Harden's taking up the five. Like, and I understand if they're not going to call it, do it all day. If no one's going to call it, do it all day. But I don't think it's good for the league. And I don't think it's just James Harden. I think Chris Paul has kind of fallen into this, too. They're both big floppers as well. But, if, I mean, if they're going to give you the foul, do it, right? It's just my two cents. I don't think it's good for the league, but I guess that's the direction we're going. I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate you, Josh.
Fellas?
I mean, I don't know about
he
the whole
getting unbiased,
good at slow
but,
motion. And
I mean, look, here's the thing. I would go with unbiased until you talk about Harden and Paul being floppers as well, because everyone in the league does it. And some do it more than others. Some do it better than others. But the same could be said about how they get away with what they get away with, whether you want to call it a travel or not. Some do it better than others. If you're doing it right, whether it's an absolute travel because you have to slow it down to such slow levels to try and figure out how many steps are taken, the human eye is not going to pick that up at real speed at real time. So you're doing it right. Whether you're traveling or not, if you're doing it right, you're getting away with it.
I don't think it's bad for the league, but I mean, if he's the whole point about him taking up to five steps, he certainly took up to five steps on that travel call. I don't know on the normal step backs that he's going up that high in terms of steps, but maybe he is. But I don't know if it's bad for the league. The league always has to have to address issues as the league evolves, but I don't know if it's bad for the league.
I don't think it's bad for the league. Go ahead, Barry.
I don't have an opinion. I mean, I've stated it. I don't think it's a travel. Last night's was a five-step travel. Otherwise, it's not a travel.
Let me ask you a question.
Is
it a problem for the league when a guy's scoring 47 points a night? He's done it. He's player of the week. So obviously it's not hurting him any. He's Western Conference player of the week. He's in the light. He's in the same breath as Michael Jordan and Clyde Drexler for guys that have had, I think, four straight 40-plus point night games. That can't be bad for the league. Scoring in every league is fantastic. People bang on soccer because there's not enough scoring. They changed hockey rules because of scoring. So I don't think it's bad for the league if Harden's getting 40-plus nights points a night because people love seeing that. They love to see the ball in the basket.
Yeah, people want to see scoring.
I totally agree.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, from a standpoint of the Rockets got another win, too. I mean, that's what's being lost in all of this is the fact that they got a win. They got a win. They won their fourth straight. You know, they're doing better and better. They're above 500 now. They're climbing back within the top eight playoff seeds. So a lot of things are going their way, and James Harden is the catalyst behind that, too. That's the saddest thing about all of this is the fact that you're losing sight of the fact that the real story is Harden's kicking ass and so is the team as they're climbing back into the playoff picture.
How much of that coincides with bringing Gordon into the starting lineup?
I think it has something to do with it for sure.
I do too.
Because I think that a lot of times, and Nick, you were there, but I think a lot of what you realize is whether you like it or not or you think he's better or not coming off the bench versus starting, the small lineup is where everybody in the league's going. Things get mucked up and slowing down. It gets slowed down exponentially when you bring a big man in, especially even though Capella runs the floor more. It really becomes a problem sometimes in trying to play the way D'Antoni wants to play. And I think that keeping an extra big man out of the paint and out of the way, because Capella does run the floor so well, and putting Gordon out there, I think it's definitely part of the reason.
I mean, in terms of if EG being installed into the starting lineup,
like, yeah, that's what Barry said. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, At first, I was a little skeptical, like worried about it. At first, I didn't want him installed in the starting lineup, but then when he did, you could see why he installed him, because there is an offensive spark that he brings, even if he's not necessarily hitting those three-point shots. I know he went 2-for-6 yesterday, and he hasn't been necessarily a great three-point shooter this season. But I think it does give you a spark. It does give you a veteran presence. He does take care of the ball. He's not necessarily a turnover machine. He sees the floor well. So I'm okay with it. It just always goes back to the depth and playing small ball. That can hurt you against certain teams. Against other teams, no.
Well, you can't knock the results. They're 4-0 since they started using Eric Gordon as a starter.
Yep.
And those are wins against the Blazers, Lakers, Grizzlies, and Jazz. And that's not, I mean, you could do a, there's worse teams in the West and in the NBA than those four, so. Can't knock the results. No, I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated the rest of the year, but it's a good. At least they did something to stop the woefulness that we were seeing.
I mean, I do like Polillo's point. He wants to see a solid month of consistent play. He's not sold on this 4-game winning streak, and that he would, if he sees a solid month of consistent play, then he might be more prone to saying that this is a competitive team closer to what they had last year. But
yeah, because I still don't like the bench.
I don't either. I do not either.
To make this a championship caliber team, but their starters are doing what they're asking them. And that, to Barry's point, that has a lot to do with Eric Gordon being the starting lineup. So Curtis wants to get in here and talk about James Harden. What's up, Curtis?
Hey guys, great show as always. Love you guys. But just wanted to make a quick couple thoughts. You know, everyone that complains about James Harden's step back, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when Adrian Peterson would run, everyone knew he was going to do it, but they couldn't stop them. Everyone knows that's what James Harden's going to do 15 times a game, but then you can't stop them. But on top of that, it's not like those rules are only applied to James Harden. Anyone else can do the step back as well. It's not like they don't just call it a travel on James Harden. So it's like, if you can't beat him, join him, and everyone's going to find something to complain about. And I just feel like that's what everyone's doing with Harden.
That's a
but
good point.
Thanks, guys. I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Curtis. Appreciate the support.
It's a good point, Curtis. There's a lot of traveling that goes on. Hell, I just saw Carmelo do one 2015 that didn't get called.
Well, and you know, the NBA.
It happens a lot. Watch on the out of bounds. Watch on an out of bounds play. Watch how much travel happens on an out of inbound after a bucket. When they throw the ball in to whoever's bringing the ball up the court, a lot of times they'll take a couple steps before they start dribbling. There's a lot of traveling that goes on in the NBA.
Some of it's legal, some of it's not.
Yeah.
On a make, you can travel the baseline. Like in college, you can go the entire corner to corner. But in the NBA, it's different, where off a make is different from like inbounding on the side. But you know, to your point, the fact of the matter, and the point I'm making is, why are we forgetting about all the good things James Harden did last night? Because we're focused on a travel. And you know,
yeah,
the
I think we were wearing it out. I think it was one call. Yeah.
The dunk that he had on Gobert was one of the top five dunks of the year. It was huge.
Yeah.
And he played his tail off. Now, the NBA referees came out and said, okay, we admit it. Last night was a travel. But remember, they were contrite this time. And they were just like, well, we missed one. That's what they said. But when it was Chris Webber making the commentary and they didn't like it, they were like pointing the finger and browbeating him and trying to take a personal shot. You can't have it both ways, NBA. So there's that. So we can move on because obviously, you know, you said we exhausted it. But
no, just the travel part of it. Yeah. I mean, like we're sitting here and diagnosed three steps and five steps. And I mean, it's obvious what a travel is in the NBA. And he got away with one and it's going to happen. And I feel like there's a lot of times where when it comes to a guy like James, and people either love him or hate him.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's easier to kind of, oh, well, let's nitpick this one little thing about his game.
In other cities, there's a target on his back of hatred.
Well, nationally,
it's nothing
that
he ever did except for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They hate him because he is maximizing the rules, which is not his fault. And that's a shame.
It's like you hate him when he's not on your team.
Absolutely. It's like the whole Stockton and Malone thing, but or they played with a guy. Matt Harpering, Patrick Beverley, guys that you hated when they were on another team,
yep.
But you'd love to have them on your
Absolutely.
Team.
Absolutely. If James Harden was a Pelican doing that step back and those cut-throughs with the ball and getting those fouls, they're not saying a word.
No, absolutely not. But now here, let me throw this at you before we go to break so you can kind of sit on it. So we've talked about Gordon helping out by being in the starting lineup. If you're going to make a trade to make this bench better or you want to improve this team, isn't he the only asset that you have that could bring you something in return? And he's been up and down, but are you willing to part with Eric Gordon just to try and strengthen your bench? And how many pieces do you need to make that work? And can you afford to give him up? Because now he's more valuable than he was coming off the bench when he's proven to you that as a starter, he's maximizing the entire team's effort. So You want to kick that around and hit it after the break?
Yeah, we can get it after the break. That's fine.
Well, let's just kick it around and see what you, I just want to see what you guys thought because you brought up Gordon and I had been thinking about that. All right, before we go to the break, I do want to tell you if there's a golfer on your list for this holiday season, PXG Golf Clubs could be the answer for you because every golfer out there wants to lower their scores and have more fun on the course. And PXG Golf Clubs has an answer for the golfer on your list that wants to do all those things and more because PXG Golf Clubs will have you launching the ball higher, carrying it more with distance. It's a softer feeling for a club. It provides more forgiveness, more accuracy than any other club you've put in your bag. And the reviews say the same thing. They're all about PXG Golf Clubs being the hottest new club on the market. They're remarkable, the best clubs out there, and undeniably the best. And if you don't think you want to hear it from people that review golf clubs, how about local pros? The pros that are working constantly day in, day out, giving you lessons and telling you about products. They said they're insanely good and they live up to the hype. And on the tours, they are living up to the billing because PXG Golf Clubs have won on every major tour around the globe and even a college national championship. Check out PXG Golf Clubs. If you want to get that person on your Christmas list, the right golf clubs, what are you waiting for? Step up your game, enjoy more golf than ever, and schedule your fitting for PXG Golf Clubs at the Golf Club of Carlton Woods in the Woodlands. All you got to do is call 844-PLAY-PXG, 844-PLAY-PXG, or visit pxg.com to book your custom fitting. PXG, nobody does golf clubs the way we do, period.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back on The Usual Suspects. 90 in the books, 90 still to go in the big show as it's Barry, Nick, and Joel in studio. I know you guys are just enthralled with Rockets talk, and there were threats yesterday about if we talk too long about it. But just to wrap it up, I thought I'd ask you guys a question simply because of the fact that, you know, people are demanding a trade for this team. And I just don't know who's out there. And we've seen Jimmy Butler go by the wayside and Kyle Korver and some of the guys we thought were fits for the Rockets. Eric Gordon has always been like the centerpiece of trades that the Rockets are asking. If Daryl can't get someone to bite on Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight, just from a salary perspective. But with Gordon being more effective now, can you afford to give him up? And what do you have to get back? Is there anybody out there that you want to get back or a couple players you can get back out there that make you a better team? I just don't know if externally there are answers.
I don't think you can get rid of a guy that fits the mold of what you do since you've already done that a couple of times with Mbah Mute and Trevor Ariza. I mean, this is a guy that – Eric Gordon's not great on defense, but he gives you maximum effort. It's not like he takes plays off. He may not be great skill-wise, but he gives you the effort that you're looking for on this team. He'll shoot the three. He can be your backup point guard. If God forbid something happens to James Harden or Chris Paul, he can bring the ball up the floor. He can also shoot. He's a versatile player. And I think you're shooting yourselves in the foot and you're digging the hole deeper that you dug in the offseason if you get rid of a guy like that.
Nick?
I'm okay with getting rid of Gordon more than Tucker. Tucker's to me the guy that you just cannot move. But Gordon, when you consider some of the inconsistency and you consider the fact that he could fit in a lot of other teams, it might be the move to make. Not because I want him to go, but because it might be the only piece that you can move to get something decent in return. Now, if Daryl Morey and company has something up their sleeve to where they can make those additions without getting rid of Eric Gordon, that would be fantastic. I would love Eric Gordon to go back to the bench, not because I don't think he's a starter, but I think he was such an asset coming off the bench despite what you've been able to see with him in the starting lineup. So if I had to choose, I would say no. But if that's the only move that you can make, it might be. And I think he's a third or fourth. With the Clint Capella contract, he's the fourth highest paid Rocket on this roster. So you could free up some money by getting rid of Eric Gordon.
Only point in asking was you got to give to get. And there's not many salaries you can give to get in return what you need unless people are willing to bite on the two guys you got from Phoenix who really don't have a lot of value around the league. So interesting to see if they can get better externally or if they just have to go with this internal, you know, movement. They call it the greenhouse effect. One of the fans suggested the name, but it's clever, it's catchy. But when Green and House are playing well, they're a different team because they're getting help off the bench.
Yeah, I saw a comment from, I don't know if it was Paul or Harden, but he said, hey, those guys are playing hard. Their job is to come off the bench, give us some energy, which that's great. Energy is one thing. I mean, you had Corey Brewer gave you energy. Just nothing else.
Yeah.
So I don't want energy. I want defense and shots. I want points on the board. I want defensive effort, not just energy. You know, I mean, Gerald Green was a guy that gave you energy off the bench, but once his shot wasn't falling, it meant nothing. So, that's all well and good, but I think you bring up an interesting point about the fact that they have very little in the way of assets for Murray to work his magic with.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Unlike previous years, it's going to be hard for Daryl to do that job externally. It might be on the coaching staff to figure it out internally. So we'll see how they continue to play. With that being said, the other big move of the day happened later last night, but it's a guy that I desperately wanted. I'm happy about it. I was going to get your opinion, Barry, because you know you and I are both baseball aficionados, but Michael Brantley is going to sign a 2-year deal with your Houston Astros. Nice addition, I think, after a 10-year career with the Indians. He's going to be 32. He's been dinged up a little bit, but he was healthy last year, and I think he, as a left-handed stick in that lineup, could be a big catalyst to the Astros doing some bigger things.
Yeah, you know, when we talked last about what moves we wanted, I was hoping that they would make a move for somebody in left field to kind of shore up that position, and I think this is a guy that gives you versatility. This is a guy that can play either corner in outfield position as well, so it is another left-handed stick. He doesn't blow you away in any one category, but he's consistently good in all of them. He might, you know, he could go 20-80 home runs and RBIs. He'll hit 300. He might steal 20-25 bags. Slash line holds up. The only concern, really, it's been a concern. It seems like every time they sign somebody, it's the same concern: injuries. Is he going to be able to stay healthy? We were concerned about Morton, and he was fine. We were concerned about Reddick, and he's been okay. So, you know, maybe it's one of those things where the Astros have a really good training staff and training room, and they keep their guys healthier than these other teams can. That would be my only concern. Otherwise, it's a solid pickup for them, and I don't feel like that they overpaid. Who was it that McCutchen went to? Did he go to the Phillies?
Phillies, yep.
Yeah, I feel like they may have overpaid for Andrew McCutchen. So I don't feel like the Astros necessarily overpaid. He's been an all-star the last couple of years. He's been an MVP candidate. So, I mean, they got a good stick. They got a guy that can play the outfield.
And a couple of interesting things. Before he signed with the Astros, his agent was out there telling people, like Ken Rosenthal, that he's willing to play first base and be a designated hitter and do anything that the team that signs him wants. And that's exactly what they're going to want him to do, because they can move him around. They can be versatile, because right now they have a surplus of outfielders on their roster. And that's going to be an issue, because the minute that tweet came out that he is signing with the Astros, Josh Reddick put a picture of a Cookie Monster and an abacus watching the time go by. Like, is he waiting on, is he going to be traded?
What's the next move?
And you got to find someone that wants Josh Reddick too, because you talk about a guy whose batting average went down 42 points from one year to the next, who was the best hitting home outfielder or player in the American League a year, was it 2 years ago now? Last year didn't come close. So he's not living up to expectations. He's a fan favorite. Everybody loves his defense, but someone's going to go. I mean, the other fan favorite that may go in all this is Marisnik, because Marisnik's out of options to go back to the minors, and right. I believe Tony Kemp might be too. So you've got guys that you got to make decisions on. If you're going to keep Kemp, does that mean Marisnik's the odd man out? Do you try and find another home for Reddick? They've got more decisions and more moves to be made.
A name you didn't mention that I think you might leapfrog both of those and persons to get moved is Kyle Tucker. This to me signifies that a guy like Tucker, if this was their left fielder of the future, and you just went out and signed and spent $32 million on Brantley, which again, the spot track had him at $20 million a year, so you got him for $16. You got good value on him for a couple of years, but that might signal the fact that they're willing to move Reddick, or they're willing to, you know, maybe they're going to invest more in Tony Kemp as a left fielder, and you can play Brantley and Wright or vice versa. It'll be interesting to see, but to me, it kind of signifies that a guy like Tucker could be on the move, a guy like Fisher could be on the move, Josh Reddick might be in that mix. Yeah, but Reddick, I think, is one of those guys where we talked yesterday, one of the rumors was they were trying to trade him.
Yeah.
It wouldn't bother me if they did. He's a guy that, you know, he did his job well, but he was never, you know, he was never in the upper echelon of this team and what they did. So moving Josh Reddick isn't a blow to the Astros, especially if you consider, hey, when you look at what they did in left field, it was a platoon situation where Tony Kemp kind of won the job. But if your replacement for Josh Reddick is Michael Brantley, you upgraded. You upgraded your outfield.
For sure. And you talk about slumps versus hitting the wall. Slump is where you have a bad playoff run like he did 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Hitting a wall is last year all of his numbers. Like I said, when your average goes down 42 points, when all your numbers across the board start to plummet, that's when you start worrying and you're still paying him over 13 a year.
Yeah.
And the exciting thing about Brantley is, and I don't know if you know this because I want to follow up with one more question for you, but Brantley swung at 1,008 pitches last season. He only missed 111 times.
Wow.
That made him the third lowest whiff rate in MLB. Bregman, seventh lowest. So wherever you put him in the lineup, that's going to be a – because you remember now, Altuve was one of the best eyes in baseball until the knee started bothering him and he was flailing at pitches. So my question to you then becomes, and the bench was discussing this a little bit this morning, where's he going to hit? Because some people have said leadoff. Some people have said the two-hole as a left-handed bat with a guy, especially if the leadoff hitter gets on base, opens up a hole on the right side. But where would you hit him?
I think I would hit him second.
Okay.
I really do. I think I would hit him second. I think I would go Springer, Brantley, Altuve. And this is going to catch some ire, but then I would probably have Bregman and then Correa. I think that you want your, you know, Correa, unless he turns things around. He's not. I don't think he earned that four hole.
No, the big thing I don't think Gray's he earned that four
healthy
spot.
Too. Yeah, he's got to be healthy. But you don't want a guy that can get on base at the clip that Brantley does. He can steal bags. You talked about his back control. He can move a runner over if that's what you're looking to do. I don't think you waste that in the bottom of the lineup. I mean, Tony Kemp was great in the nine hole because he was a table
second
setter as
hitter,
it. Yeah, but I think you've got to have Brantley's bat, especially. And I didn't know his whiff rate, which was if it's better than Bregman's.
Yeah.
You want that because now you've got Springer, you've got a guy who's going to make contact or get on base in Brantley, and then you've got two guys that can make contact and don't strike out in Altuve and Bregman coming up next. Then you've got RBI situations for Yuli and Correa
after that. Would you move Bregman to the one, the leadoff?
No, I don't think I would.
Because his power numbers went up, you think he's more valuable at 3-4?
I like him in those RBI slots. I mean, some people might, and that was the, you know, Springer was... They were talking about that with Springer because he was 5 or 6. But I don't know if I would lead Bregman off. But I certainly want him in the top 3 or 4 because you want him getting as many at-bats as he can.
With all those names you just rattled off, to put Yuli in the 6 or 7 spot,
it's crazy.
The bottom of the lineup just instantaneously gets better.
Well, when you think about this now, I saw another rumor on MLB Rumors. The Astros aren't out of the JT Realmuto sweepstakes.
I was going to say, your point about Tucker becomes real important.
If they move Kyle Tucker and maybe Reddick and add JT Realmuto to this lineup, wow.
Yeah, tell me about it. Now you're not just competing with the Red Sox and Yankees.
Man.
You get a step up again.
Yeah, yeah, that gives me goosebumps.
So lots of fun stuff if you want to kick it around with the Astros as well, because that was a talk last night. We've got plenty more on our agenda, but if you've got something on your mind you want to get off your chest, 713-780-3776. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. Back with more. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Jump around. Jump around. Jump up and get down.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back rolling through hour number 2, 3-hour show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Sports Mapper is going to join us at the top of the hour. We always appreciate the simulcast, and we'll be doing that till 4. Blitz will be doing that till 7. As we talked a little Astros, Barry, the other thing I wanted to ask you was, where do you think they go next? Because I had heard the Realmuto rumors as well, but obviously starting pitching still has to be addressed. I heard Charlie talking about some of the, they have names, but not the ability they once had as potential starters to fill the void if they need to. As much as I love the Realmuto signing, I would love to see them. If you're going to use Tucker, do you use him for Realmuto or do you use him for a starter? Let me start it that way.
I think you've got to address the catcher situation too, because if the crew you have now serviceable, but I just don't know if, because you, look, I know it's not great, the rotation, like it was last year, but you've still got a lot of good arms in that rotation, and you've got some guys that could probably come up and fill that role as well. But to the drop off that you're going to have in catcher if Max Stassi is the guy you're looking at as being a real contributor to this team, that's also kind of scary. I mean, he was great in fill in duty, but he's never going to be a frontline starter for a team. And so I think if you can add Realmuto, we just talked about the lineup as is. Mm-hmm. Think about that. You add that back to this lineup, and even if your pitching isn't great, people are going to have to outscore you. They're going to have to beat you, you know, 6-5, 6-4, stuff like that. So I think they've got to get that addressed, and if they're comfortable with who they've got, okay. But I would also look at, to me, if I'm going to move a guy, you try to get a young arm that you can lock down for the next couple of years, because there is that you have to worry about in the next year or so. You're going to lose Verlander, you might lose Cole. You know, you don't know what McCullers' future is going to hold after Tommy John surgery. It may take him a year or more to bounce back from it. So you've got some young arms, but is that going to be enough?
Like, Charlie threw out Anibal Sanchez as a guy that they could sign
okay. And
put into the starting rotation. Not sexy.
You've got enough threes, though. That's the thing, is I feel like you've got a ton of threes and fours.
Because Peacock these young and guys, McHugh, too.
Peacock and McHugh are good serviceable, you know, threes in any rotation in the major. So, you don't know what Perez is going to be necessary. James, you don't know what
Josh James?
No. That's the James. You don't know
Framber
James
Valdez.
And Forrest Whitley. You don't know what they're going to be. You know what their potential is, but you don't know what they're going to be. So, yeah, if you could get a third or fourth arm and maybe not have to bring both Peacock and McHugh out of the pen, which is going to deplete the depth of that bullpen a little bit, especially when it comes to middle relief, it's going to help, because you can't – it's similar to what the Rockets went through, man. You can't lose some of these names. You lose a Charlie Morton. That affects that rotation it's a significant loss to that team.
Sure it is.
Even though he's not a one, he was still a guy that you knew. Basically, this team had a bunch of streak stoppers. If you were losing two or three in a row, the next guy up could stop that streak easily. A lot of teams didn't have that luxury. Once you got past one or two, three, four, and five was always a crapshoot. Not with this team.
Yeah, you think about it. Keuchel was the only guy that from time to time you worried a little bit about stopping a streak, because he also had the pattern of giving up runs in the first inning. But you're right. There's a reason why he was Charlie F. and Martin, because he did whatever you needed him to do, and he did it in a big way, and he succeeded. Now, the one thing I will say this to agree with you, too, about looking at Realmuto is, because of all the names you mentioned coming up in free agency, plus the core four, the fact that you have Altuve signed, but you still have to sign Bregman and Correa and Springer coming down the pike, Realmuto's so good offensively, too. He could be one of those core four guys should one go to another team and decide to walk in free agency, because that's how good he is offensively, as well as being, you know, a cornerstone behind the plate.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. I mean, Chirinos and Max Stassi are fine, even with, what's his name, Machete, Maldonado. Those guys are fine, but that's why you had a Brian McCann, because he could go out and get you 20 home runs and hit for, you know, move guys around and had a little bit of pop in his bat. Obviously, at the end of his career, and when the first couple of years he was here, was much better than last year. But yeah, I mean, if you can get significant contributions offensively from a catcher on a baseball team, that's huge. That's why they're so valuable.
Because look at Brian McCann, who one time was a stick in the league.
Yep.
But just fell way off, and all the guys you mentioned, you're right. If you can get a good hitting catcher, that's why Salvador Perez with the Royals, because not only is he a great receiver, but he's a stick.
Yeah.
That's why he's got value. That's why he signed a big deal. Now, if I threw any of these names at you, because you talk about it, if it's a three or a four or a five, if you're just looking in free agency alone, and you don't do a trade, or you don't use Tucker or dangle him to get, and you use it for Realmuto. Some of the guys that are being discussed, I said Anibal Sanchez is one of them. You could re-sign Keuchel, but I'm sure the price tag's too big. Matt Harvey? Wade Miley?
No, I tell you, if you're looking to get... I mean, Harvey's one of those risk rewards, though. Yep. If he's the Matt Harvey that was, you know, pumped up so much out there in New York, then it might be worth it. But a guy that I thought might have a decent career, even down the stretch here, is Gio Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of in that Matt Harvey group too, where you don't know what you're going to get. And he had a 4+ ERA that, you know, last year, but he had a sub-3 the year before. So there's just not a lot of sexy names anymore. All the sexy names really have been gobbled up. I mean, they really have, when you were looking at the Haps of the world and everybody else. So I think you're the what I've seen left on the list, like you said, like Wade Miley and all these guys, there's a lot of threes out there.
There's a lot of threes,
so you're not going to be able to replace these with a frontline, another ace, which is what I know a lot of folks wanted. Oh, you could go out and have three aces like they had last year. They really had four.
Yeah, but maybe you get a one-year deal with these guys, too, so that you can weigh your options for next year. I mean, Edwin Jackson's looking to play for his 23rd team, so you know you might be able to add him. He had a great year for the A's.
What's crazy and what's important to remember is that it's important to have the depth, which was the luxury they had last year. If any of the guys in the rotation, whether it was Verlander, Cole, Keuchel, McCullers, or whoever was their five, that you had McHugh and you had Brad Peacock ready to go, you're going to lose some of that depth. So if you add a three or a guy close to that, you're never going to replace Charlie Morton. You're just not. That the value and what he was able to do on the mound is going to be really difficult to replace. But if
you bring up a great point, because for the money,
yep.
Oh my God, he made it. He became that much more valuable.
Yeah, but you've got guys you think could be that. I don't know. I just don't want to see him get older. That's the only thing that scares me is some of the names you've thrown out, and then people are saying guys like James Shields.
Oh no, but Wade Miley, at least on a playoff stage, proved that he still had something left in the tank as a three. That's not a bad pickup if you can get them on a short-term deal or a very, financially favorable deal.
That's a good point.
So they can look at things like that. But, yeah, that's why I wanted to get your opinion on that. If you're going to use Tucker or you're going to make that one big splash in a trade, not free agency, what are you going after? And if it is Real Muto, I know it'll bring the ire of some fans that wanted starting pitching. But because, like you said, they have depth, Real Muto could be a cornerstone for this team for a long time.
If you traded him and then signed a Miley or a Gio Gonzalez or something like that as free agents, these starters become
more valuable and better because if the offense is putting up 5 and 6 runs a game, makes starting pitching a hell of a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we've got two in the books. We still have an hour to go, and we're going to be joined by the Sports Mappers next. If you want to get on the conversation, 713-780-3776, HRNP Listener Line. Call us, text us, tweet us. It's the usual suspects. It's ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.